if it wasn't real, it would have been complete. It was hilarious, but I mean, it was just a comedy show. I mean, honestly, it was like a sketch on TV that wasn't real. It was so comical.
So why would two guys leave comfortable jobs, move across the country, and start a business in an industry they don't know, a place they don't know, and could it be successful?
We're Dale and Brian Carmi. Join us as we share our story and inspire you to become people of impact.
Welcome to the Impact Without Limits podcast.
Welcome to the Impact Without Limits podcast. This is Dale Carmi here, my brother Brian.
Hey everybody, welcome back.
So we are, this episode, we're going to be on day four of week one of our trial. And, you know, quick recap, day one was not actually, it was in the courtroom, but it wasn't part of the trial. It was motions in limine, beginning of jury selection. Day two, finished the jury selection, felt pretty good about what we had queued up there. And had opening arguments, and it was an interesting contrast between, obviously, that's what you'd expect, between how they were portraying the case and how we were, and, you know, they were portraying us as the mean corporate, big corporate mothership that was trying to hurt their business, and we were portraying them as, you know, the small people who didn't know how to operate a business, and, right, we're painting our picture on what the trial was going to look like.
And just day one? Felt good at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right? Felt like we won the day.
Well, day one.
The jury selection.
Yeah, because we liked the jury. Day two. Felt good.
Felt like we had won the day. Day three ended with Dan, their attorney, declaring himself incompetent. And so, as far as the trial.
That's a good feeling.
It's all flowing in our direction.
Personally, it didn't feel good because we felt bad for him and for the plaintiffs, but. We think we're 3 out of 3 on our days right now.
Now, again, we said we ended that night, spent some time, you know, worried about Dan personally.
Yeah.
And so we're going to court that.
I'm telling you, I didn't think that he was going to be there.
No.
I'm trying to figure out, right, because we said that's that big matzo ball sitting out there. He declares himself incompetent to represent the plaintiffs in this case, does it before the judge, does it before us, does it before his clients, and it's like, where do you go from here? So we show up day four, we turn off Joe PS, we put him in the back seat, we get to the courtroom on time using what we like to call our minds.
Memory.
And
there were a couple surprises.
The biggest surprise, the first surprise, Dan showed up. Their attorney showed up.
He walks in. We thought for sure that he might flee, he might whatever, but he shows up.
The second surprise, not on the list, same suit.
I don't think that one was a surprise, but we'll count it. So Dan's there in the same wrinkled brown suit, but he is there. And before the jury comes in, he, you know, there's always some like motions or quick discussions with the judge. And he has another one. He throws out another curveball. He says, Your Honor, before the jury comes in, we'd like to move to waive the jury, meaning no more jury. The judge decides the case on merits. And so we're looking at this and we're like, I mean, in general, if you are the plaintiff, you want a jury.
You want a jury.
If you are the defendant, you don't. I mean, just if you just think about it, if you're, you know, the whole little guy versus the corporate, the mothership stuff.
The jury enables you to use emotion to present, argue, and hopefully win the case. A judge is generally going to be emotionless and simply look at the information as it's presented and make a ruling. I think juries can be manipulated. Judges
should
less
be
so.
More letter of the law. And we already knew, right? The judge knew about the bankruptcy. We couldn't say bankruptcy in front of the jury. The no speculative damages that, you know, you couldn't, the judge is going to decide more based on the facts. However, we also had the thing where just the day before the judge looked at us, he looks at that side and says, you have no case. You're losing the jury.
Right.
Which is why they wanted to get rid of it. Saying you're losing the jury. And then he looks at us and says, "Well, you should just pay him 60 grand.
Like,
wait, 60,000? Are you kidding me?"
So in our minds, the judge is predisposed to say, "You guys owe him money. Let's just get split this done baby. And get out of here."
Right? We expect the judge to split the baby, yep. Right? And we don't want we wanted a victory.
We're 3 for 3 right now on days.
Everything's rolling our way. So we have this conversation with our attorneys and we have to make a quick decision, but we decide we don't want to waive the jury. We think the jury's on our side. So
the judge thinks the jury's on our side.
So we say, "No, Your Honor, we want to keep the jury." And I'm just going to tell you,
you could feel it.
Judges are people too, right? Yeah. And they have emotions and they get offended and it makes a difference.
He was ticked.
Because essentially what we're saying is, "Judge, we don't trust you to make the decision.
We're going to go with
those 12 guys over there."
He was not happy. Well, for multiple reasons. One, I think he wants to put the jury out of their misery because it was awful to this point. He wants to release them and not waste their time. Two, he's probably feeling if there is no jury, he can control.
Yep, he's
going
to go
what's
faster.
Going on better. It'll be quicker and get it done with. And then, you know, three, the third part, we basically snubbed him. We said, "You know what? Nah, we don't want to go with you. We're gonna stick with the jury."
So the judge says, "Okay, fine. Then you're going to..." So there's a cost to the jury, right? If you're ever summoned to jury duty, you get $100 a day, whatever it is. But the judge looks at us and says, "Well, fine, then you're going to pay for the entire jury." So normally you split it and each side pays half. Now we've got to pick up an extra, I don't know what it is, another $600, $1,000.
I actually
additional.
Think they were paying the whole thing because at the beginning we asked for a trial by judge. Yeah. They wanted a trial by jury. So I think they had to pay. If we both agreed, it would be split.
Right.
So then we totally reversed where they asked to have what we originally wanted. And then we asked to stay with what they originally wanted.
But hey, what's a couple $1,000 a day? I mean, what? At this point, the attorney's counters are clicking. I mean, that's not that big of a deal. Mm. So then there's still more action before the judge.
Right, that one hurts.
Before the jury walks in. JSA then says, "Can we at least have a 1 day continuance? Because this is Thursday. The court is closed. It's dark day on Friday. That means they would have gotten a long weekend if they had, you know, today off, Friday off. So 4 day weekend, maybe they could have regrouped." I think Dan's probably thinking he could go do a little research in the legal books and figure out how to ask a question. But the judge, he's just getting angry and grumpy at this point. He says, "No, we're not doing a continuance. The jury's here. We're moving forward. Let's get this show on the road. Trial must go on." So day 4 of court starts up. Matt, their star witness, is still on the stand. And their attorney continues to ask questions, and it didn't get any better. The objections just piled up.
Wrong, inappropriate questions, and we shatter the day 1 record.
It just keeps climbing. Dan is asking Matt questions, and finally he just gets stumped, and he's just like, "Okay," and he like rests on the witness, and it gets to be our turn, and so Dave, our attorney, gets to cross-examine Matt, and he starts to dive in, and he's like laser focused. And there were a couple of times I think Dan tried to object, and judge was like, "No, overruled." Like, Dan had no idea; he didn't even know when to object. I mean, their attorney was certainly not a trial attorney, and Dave did a great job. And he would walk Matt through some questions, and then he'd get him to say something, and then he'd say, "Okay, well, pull up your deposition," and he'd pull up the deposition, and three different times he would have Matt, you know, ask some questions and say something, and then pull up the deposition and have Matt read it. And clearly Matt had said two different things, contradictory things on three different occasions. He essentially shows that the witness perjured himself. So you're like, "Oh my goodness, their star witness." I think
dump a few more marbles on our side.
The marbles are filling. And so it's just not looking good for the other side. And this goes on throughout the day. And we get to about 4 o'clock and Matt's done. Right. And he's pretty, it's rough. It's a lot when you're on the witness stand and Dan is stuck at 4 o'clock. There's still time left in the day. So he's got to call the next witness. And it's clear he's not prepared to call the next witness. So he calls their bookkeeper He calls a vet. And you could tell he's just stalling, right? He's trying to run out the clock. He's just trying to find, because he's not prepared for the next witness.
Nope.
And we're looking through the notes, and you have the note about the image of Dan fumbling around.
Look, oh my goodness. If I could project what's in my mind as a video, this thing would go viral.
It would be a comedy show.
Because just imagine Dan is looking for a document, a piece of evidence he wants to use to ask a question or to submit his evidence. And he turns around, he's looking for this exhibit and he can't find it. And he, remember, we've got boxes upon boxes, and he starts in his briefcase and he's flipping through his briefcase and pulling out papers. He can't find it. He's getting in the boxes. While he's doing this, I mean, there are papers like
falling on the
documents
floor.
Falling out and floating the floor. I remember a CD came out at one time and clunks to the floor. Dan's turning around, looking around. I mean, you hear chuckles, right? The jury is giggling.
The jury is actually laughing at this point.
And Dan's fumbling around. Oh, it's here. And he had to spend 2 or 3 minutes looking for the document he's trying to find, and he couldn't find it.
When you're in a courtroom with, like, 12 people in the jury, the judge, the 20 something people just staring at
you. It's an eternity.
It is an eternity to have a couple minutes of silence and fumbling. And
all you hear is the rustling of paper, the clanking of the CD, papers falling, and the light chuckles of the people in the jury.
If it wasn't real, it would have been complete. It was hilarious, but it was just a comedy show. I mean, honestly, it was like a sketch on TV that wasn't real. It was so comical. I mean, this guy in a wrinkled brown suit can't ask questions with these boxes, these piles of boxes, rooting through all of them, trying to find stuff on the floor with a witness on the stand. This poor girl's up there. She's trying to answer questions.
So another thing that happened today, Brian, amidst all the objections, we had the objections of day one. We had more objections in day two. Somebody else entered the objection scene. Do you remember who it was?
I believe it was Judge.
It was the judge.
The judge started
objecting to questions the attorney was asking.
I mean,
and the judge obviously sustains his own objection.
His objections were more like, you can't ask that. That's leading the witness. You can't do that.
And then I think we might talk about it more.
Yeah.
But I mean, he starts asking the questions.
Yeah. I mean, I think
the first day he might have asked one or two. There's more to come. But I'm sitting there thinking, okay, first of all, what an absolute train wreck. You didn't think it could get any worse than day one, and it did. And you would think that they could figure out how to ask a question and get through things, and they didn't. And I think our objection count rose, from 117 to maybe 130, 140. I don't remember. We have the counts.
It was crazy.
And now you've got, Brian and I, we're able to call out objections. The judge is objecting. I mean, it is just like, it's surreal. Again, I've said that a couple of times, but it is. It's like, is this really happening?
If this were a TV show, I think people would say, oh, that wasn't real. Yeah, that's embellished. That could never happen in real life. I mean, it was so ridiculous. And it probably would have been much funnier to watch it on TV than to be in the courtroom.
It would be funny.
I mean, this was our life. This was our business, our lives sitting there. And it just crazy to think. But we get through it. It was only about an hour of him fumbling with a vet on the stand. And so we're at recess.
We get to the end of the day. So for us, the end of the day is also the end of the week.
We're bolting.
Right? Because it closed on Friday. So what are we doing?
We're scooting to the airport.
Feet to the airport.
Yep. We catch a red eye home.
Dude, I remember being at the airport, and I think it was this time. Was.
Yep.
We were like talking through what was happening in the courtroom. It was hilarious. Do you remember when this happened? Do you remember that this happened and the time that he said this and the CD? Oh my goodness. We were sitting there waiting for that flight. Tears streaming, belly laughing.
That was the night that we went, not that's a big deal, but we went to PF Chang's and we had dinner because our flight wasn't until like midnight. Right.
Yeah.
And so the attorneys don't leave. And so we go and we have dinner at PF Chang's and we're kind of chuckling and going through it there. We go to the airport and we have time to kill. And we're just sitting there just like,
recounting.
Just in tears, literally in the airport. Oh, people probably thought we were idiots. That happens often. But we were just sitting there, just going back through everything that happened, from the, you know, inability to ask questions, to declaring himself incompetent, to trying to waive the jury, to fumbling,
getting scolded by the judge.
It just, I mean, it was rough. But the first week was over. The good news is we get to go home, spend time with our family. It just, you know, it's late Thursday night, so we fly home. By the time we get home, it's going to be mid-morning Friday, and we get to see our family.
Yeah, and I remember, it's kind of funny, on this weekend, I remember grabbing Jenna Lee and I think Colton and maybe Lori. It might have been all of them. I Kaylin, McKenna, I don't know, but we went to the thrift shop.
Well, you're in Hartville, Ohio.
There's not that much more to do.
You go either to the hardware kitchen or to the thrift shop.
So we go to the thrift shop, and I don't remember exactly what happened. When we were out with the attorneys, we wanted to buy something for Randy, the attorney. Either commented about, where's my gift? You know, okay, get something from Ohio. Or it was his birthday. There was something. Maybe we gave Dave something and he felt left out. So I thought, I'm going to get Randy a gift. And so we go to the thrift shop and we're just looking around, and I find the like old man coat rack section, jacket section. And I start finding these sport coats. And this is, you know, circa 20, 30 years prior, and something that a 6-year-old guy would wear, plaid jacket, pinkish and pastel colors. And it looks like what you'd see somewhere. We call it Del Boca Vista.
I mean, so many Seinfeld references. You had the matzo ball hanging. I talked about Kramer. The Del Boca Vista is where Seinfeld's parents go to retire. This was the Del Boca Vista jacket.
I'm just cracking up. And I even think I called you. I'm like, Brian, I think I got it. Let's buy Randy this jacket. This would be a good gag gift. We come out, we're going to say, hey, Randy, we thought about you. We wanted to get you something. Write him a little note. You know, thank you for representing us in the case. And we buy this jacket. So that was it. We spent the weekend with the families. I don't know if you did anything you wanted to call attention to.
I mean, I don't remember specifically what I did, but I do just remember the feeling of just constant tension when you're in the middle of this. And the ability to come home and just relax, just be with the family, enjoy it, hang out with the girls. We were in spring, so I don't know if there were any sports going on for us at that point. Basketball would have been over, and I don't think they were really playing softball at that point. But just to have the time with the family to relax, to regroup, and just let the stress kind of fade away again. But then, as you get towards Sunday, we've got to fly out Sunday.
To tighten up.
You feel that noose tightening up around your neck, and you're like, oh my goodness, it wasn't a dream. It's reality.
Yeah, and it's not over.
We've got to go back. And this time we know we're going back, and we're going to be gone for 2 weeks because we're not coming home the next weekend. One, there's a cost to it. Two, we had to take a trip on that Wednesday. We were going to fly to Albuquerque for Eli's funeral. And so we knew this was the last time we were going to see our family for a couple of weeks. And remember, we were getting ready to go on a trip. So I think the way it was going to work was they were going to drive down to Charlotte and meet us. And we were going to go on spring break together in 2 weeks. That was going to be the next time we saw them. So we had to pack, get ready for the spring break trip. We had to get stuff ready. And our wives, I mean, Lori, Andrew, they were saying, I mean, for them to have to take care of the family, get everything ready, and then pack up the cars and drive to Charlotte to meet us in 2 weeks was the next time they would see us as we went on spring break. It's just crazy. I mean, the whole thing's just kind of surreal to think through. But weekend was good.
You go
back to California. Right,
you play the hand you're dealt. So that's what you're doing.
So we'll pick up with week two of the trial next week. And in case you were wondering, there are more twists and turns left to come. Have a great week.
See you, everybody.
This is the Fred Carmi reminding you that faith looks up, hope looks ahead, and love looks all around to see whom it can help. Good day.